True or false, film is better than digital.
Is there any in between?
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. A very special episode, Adam.
Oh, and why is it special?
Well, it's a crossover episode.
Wow, what does that mean?
You remember when Happy Days, when the Fonz would do an episode of Happy Days, and then later on that night he would do Law and Order or something?
Right, yeah.
Or Potsy would end up on Alf. I forget how those how the crossovers work, but someone from one show would go on the other show and vice versa.
Okay.
And Dallas.
How is this the same?
Dallas and Falcon Crest, I think.
I didn't watch either of those shows.
Okay. Well, someone can maybe write in and let us know which shows were all the crossover. But this show is a crossover with Tips from the Top Floor.
Cool.
A podcast Chris Marquardt does down the street here. And so part one is going to be on our show. And then the thrilling conclusion later on will be on his show, which is already out there. So, but before we get to that, before we get to the interview I did with Chris and a friend of his from Canada named Sean Galbraith and his wife, who were traveling in Europe, let's talk a little bit about last week's photo challenge.
Wait a second. Huh. Some guy's wife was on that interview, and I wasn't included in the interview?
Were you here?
I'm not in Germany.
No, everybody was in Germany.
Wow, I got left out, and some dude's wife got in the interview.
Yeah.
That's wrong. That's just wrong.
Okay. Thanks for making it awkward. Had you made the trip? Had you made the trip to Germany, you'd have been in.
She was probably more insightful than I am anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
And also, she showed up.
That's already a leg up on me.
Yeah, made the effort.
Okay.
Didn't
I'm
going to
listen. I'm going to listen to it, and I want to see because you know if she isn't better than I am,
yeah.
then maybe I can. Yeah, what's the audio version of Photoshop over top of her audio? Voiceover. I could voiceover.
It's audio shop. Yeah.
Okay.
So this week's photo challenge. Let's get right into that.
What was it? Remind me.
It was black and white landscape.
Right. I don't know that I did that. Yeah, but I did something. I did something awesomer than that.
True. Ish. Okay, well, let's start with yours. What did you do? The challenge was black and white landscape, which before we get into that, it landscape photography kind of has like a, well, to me, it doesn't necessarily have a distinct meaning.
Right.
So you are okay with what you did, but to the purists out there, I think they like to say that it is basically just nature, nothing man-made, just 100% natural.
Okay. I hope no purists are listening to our show, because if they're pure, if they're purists, they shouldn't be listening to our show.
That's true. They're beyond us.
Yeah.
However, so for landscape, what did tell us what you did?
Well, as we've been talking about on previous episodes, the NHL, that is hockey, the Stanley Cup Finals are going on, and the Vancouver Canucks are in the finals. And so I went to watch the game at the arena where the Canucks play. However, the game was actually occurring in Boston, and we were just in the arena watching it on the big screen. So I took a picture of what I thought was an interesting landscape, although it isn't actually nature. It's a picture taken inside the rink of all the towel-waving, frantic fans. And I don't think you'd know it. The angle I took it at, this was my intention, was to basically show, I mean, this was a sold-out rink, and the game wasn't even occurring here. So there is more than 14,000 fans. And I took it at an angle such that you would have thought the game was occurring right there. You see the corner of the rink, and you see the towel-waving fans. But this is all just like a giant movie screen where people are watching in the rink, basically a big TV.
You know you're crazy for hockey when you sell out the arena, and you're not even there.
Yeah. Oh, and it sold out in a minute, if you can believe that.
In a minute.
Yeah. We were trying to get tickets originally, and they went on sale at 12 o'clock, and at 12:01, they were all sold out. And then we said, how is that even possible? Well, apparently, you know, they pre-sold some of the tickets to season ticket holders, and they just snapped up everything. So it was a $10 charity event where all the money was going to charity, and people were scalping the tickets outside. So that's
let's
how
not get political.
Yeah, that's how people wanted on Craigslist $80 for a $10 charity ticket.
Really?
Yeah, that's how
I heard. There was a lot of pushback on that though, because it was charity, because people are really eating it on that.
Yeah, but it was happening. I saw it firsthand, and people were buying tickets. So no, it was an awesome experience for all the common fans who can't afford the ridiculous prices of the Stanley Cup. And so it took a lot of the corporate feel out of it, and it was just the everyday fans, lots of families, great atmosphere. And this cheer that I shot in my picture is actually the cheer after O Canada finished. So that's just the national anthem. That's the cheer. And you see almost everybody's on their feet waving the flags, or waving the towels, I should say.
Nice.
Yeah. So there it is. That's my picture. The Canucks landscape. I titled it, by the way.
You did?
Yeah. Canucks landscape.
I titled mine Challenge 16. So now, is this with the flash?
To be honest, I don't even remember. I don't know. I think so. Now that I'm looking at it, I took some with flash and some without. I think this is with the flash. I'll have to, I'm not so quick with pulling up the EXIF data. You're better at that than I am.
Yeah, I don't have it on this one. I've already resized your picture and stripped the EXIF data.
So that means it's gone?
It's gone on my end.
Okay.
So, but she looks very well lit to me.
I'm gonna pull it up because I actually think I can do it. So here we go. So, this was with flash at 1/100th of a second shutter speed and an aperture of 2.8.
And the focus is on?
The focus is on the background.
Right.
Because I didn't want, I don't know any of these people, and I felt a little bit weird, you know, shooting a focused picture of strangers and then putting it up for all to see. So I figured I'd blur them out, and then I'd have a focused background, and really nobody would be distinguishable. So that was my intention.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was with the 50mm lens, and and there was a slight exposure compensation I think I did 1/3 under for no particular reason, to be honest.
Well, it worked out for you.
Yeah.
Did you shoot it in black and white, or did you?
No, I shot it in color, and then I converted it in aperture to black and white. And I thought, originally I was just taking these pictures. I wasn't thinking that I was going to use this for the photo challenge, but I thought it looked real good in black and white. So that's what I submitted it.
It does look good in black and white.
It actually looked better than it did in color, to be honest. I could send you both, because I guess the lighting in the arena, it was very hard to color balance it.
Oh, sure, I'll bet. If you notice down in I'm sure you already noticed, but the bottom left-hand corner where it says Boston Pizza crossed out and says Vancouver Pizza.
Yes.
That's, for those of you who don't know, Boston Pizza is I don't know if it's worldwide, but North American chain of pizza restaurant. And now that Vancouver's playing Boston in the finals, which has never happened before. They've decided to rebrand Boston Pizza, Vancouver Pizza, for the duration of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And it wasn't totally unique in that in the first round, Montreal played Boston, and they actually renamed the Boston Pizzas Montreal Pizza. So it wasn't, you know, that creative to all of a sudden do it again and call it Vancouver. It lost a little bit of its luster, but
that's
still.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, still cool, though. Still cool.
Because I saw an article online about it, and someone said, oh, brilliant marketing. And I thought, brilliant? striking while the iron's hot, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Why are you going to bring us down, Adam, with all this negative talk?
Sorry.
Good work, guys. Good work, Vancouver Pizza.
And just so everybody knows, I've got a lot of energy tonight because the game just concluded. Game 5 just concluded, and the Canucks just won 1-0 against Boston. So the Canucks are in command once again in the series 3-2 of a best of 7. So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling psyched right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty exhausted. I was on the edge of my seat the entire game.
And it's pretty early there for you now.
It's very early. It's 5:46 a.m.
Yeah, so
right now.
So you're ready to go too. You're psyched.
Yeah. So there's that. So okay. Well, let's move on to.
You don't have any critical feedback or anything. No constructive criticism.
I love it.
Awesome. Just not really a landscape in the purists.
Probably not what our listeners were thinking. And I'll be honest with you, not exactly what I thought you would do. I thought you would go out and get the typical sort of wide shot of mountains.
Yes.
Which you'd be well within your rights to do.
Right.
But that's what led me to take my photo, because I didn't want to do that. I thought, well, you're going to go out and get this, you know, wide sweeping vista, which I don't really have here.
Yeah.
And so I decided to get more of a close-up landscape photo.
Okay.
That was my motivation here. So the other day, a couple days ago, we had a good afternoon of rain, and once that stopped, I decided to head out. And it was just kind of like a flat light, and I thought, I'm going to go around and look for a nice landscape shot around my house. And that's one of the shots that I found.
Okay, that's not the shot you use, though.
This is the one, the leaf.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, sorry, I got confused. You initially sent me another picture, but that was the runner-up.
That was the runner-up.
So the leaf is the official.
The leaf is the official one.
Okay. I'm looking at it right now. The other one
is posted on Flickr with the two white birch trees.
Yeah.
On the pond, and I ran by my wife, and she found it scary because she didn't know what was going to come running out of the black woods.
Okay.
So I thought, well, we can't have that.
I like this one better.
Yes, as do I. But knowing that it was going to be black and white, I specifically went and looked for certain lighting conditions.
Okay.
When you're shooting a black and white picture, which is going to be a whole another episode, I promise, it's difficult to get separation because oftentimes you can use color. Like if you have one of your kids is wearing a red shirt and standing next to a blue wall, automatically you're going to get separation there.
Right.
But if you were to shoot that in black and white, the red and the blue might render in a similar shade of gray, and then the shirt would then disappear and you difficulty getting separation.
Okay.
So what I, in this situation, what I look for is high contrast lighting. So here the rain had just stopped and was still on the leaf, with the light kind of peeking through the trees, it was hitting it just right, but not the leaves in the background.
Yeah, no, it jumps out at you, that leaf, definitely. And I can see what you mean with the way the light's hitting the leaf. I like it. I like it a lot. Plus, it's a maple leaf.
No. I don't know if it is, but maybe it looks
like a maple leaf to me, but I'm not a good leaf identifier, so.
I'm not a leafist myself. So, you got to be from Toronto, I think.
Yeah.
They're
e-leafists.
Right.
That was a bad pun, sorry.
I meant Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, I know what you meant.
Right.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Anyways, and also I shot this in color. Well, I didn't. That's not true. I shot it in RAW, so it comes in color.
Yeah.
And I did the conversion later in aperture, but I did set my camera to shoot it in black and white. So the preview image comes up in black and white on the back screen.
Right.
Even though I'm still going to convert it to black and white later.
Right.
Okay. You ever do that?
No, I don't.
I recommend it. It's a hot move.
I'll try it.
It gives you a nice little preview of what you're going to be looking at when you get home later without baking in that black and white info.
Yeah.
And last thing, I'm just going to give this a more of a sneak preview for how to do black and white later on. When you convert it to black and white, how did you do it?
Well, first I'm using aperture. So aperture, when I'm in RAW, one of the adjustments I can make is convert to black and white. And then I played around with the sliders to sort of get the contrast that I wanted.
Gotcha.
Yeah. How did you do it?
Whenever I convert to black and white, I tend to use filters, which is technically a digital filter. But back in the old days of film, which we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes, you used to actually put a colored filter on your lens, even though you're shooting black and white, because the colors would then render in black and white differently.
Okay.
For instance, you might use a yellow filter to get a certain effect, and et cetera, et cetera. Now you can basically recreate that. And that's what I did here. This was with a green, not quite with a green filter. A green filter is like 100% green channel,
yeah,
and no red or blue. If I remember correctly, this was a 90% green and a 10% blue.
Okay.
Was what I went with. So we'll get into that in a different episode. But for now, that's our landscape photos.
Okay.
So
I like mine better.
Yes, obviously.
Yours is okay, but yours doesn't have any Canuck fans in it.
They're out of focus in the back.
Oh, that's what that... You know what? Even if you did like an out-of-focus overlay of the score from tonight's game, I would have liked it more.
There was actually... I should take a picture of the newspaper. The German newspapers are covering the Stanley Cup.
Really?
Well, because no matter what happens, a German's going to win it.
Oh, that's true. Ehrhoff.
Yeah, Ehrhoff and Seidelberg.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and he's from down the street here. Actually, not far from the Black Forest.
That's awesome. I hate that guy. Go egg his house.
Yeah, I'll go down and I'll go throw eggs at his wife's dirndl. Yeah, that's the dress that you know.
Right.
You know the opposite of lederhosen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, I knew that.
Did you? You knew what a dirndl was?
I did.
Awesome.
I don't know why. I don't know why I knew that though.
I didn't know till like a year and a half ago that it was called dirndl.
It's just one of those weird words. Somewhere it's come up in trivia, some meaningless trivia somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's missing a couple of vowels, in my estimation.
Okay.
So.
How's the spelling?
D-I-R-N-D-L.
Oh, yeah.
I think. I'm sure there's an umlaut I missed.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an umlaut R.
All right.
No. Anyways,
segue.
So we're going to segue right into our topic of the week is a guest interview. We did a guest interview with people I mentioned before, Chris Marquardt from Tips from the Top Floor and Sean Galbraith and his wife, who are in town. We talked about film. I want to talk a little bit about film because, I mentioned it in the episode, but lately I've kind of lost my nerve a little bit.
I've been
looking at my LCD screen.
Okay.
I've been shooting digital, and I've shot a lot of film before now, like motion picture film too, and love digital. Love it. I'm not this guy who's going to tell you, oh, film is better, you know, despite the opening that you heard, which you haven't heard yet.
No, I haven't heard it.
Right. I don't think film is better. I love shooting digital, but I miss shooting film because I used to have – tremendous instincts, which sounds tremendously egotistical.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a little
bit... I'm saying people who shoot film actually had to rely on their instincts. That was what I'm saying. Because, first of all, you couldn't chimp and see your results right away, right?
Right.
So you kind of had to get it and move on. And usually you got it. But lately I've been looking, taking pictures in difficult situations and having an instinct and going with it and then looking at the LCD screen and not liking what I'm seeing on the spot.
Okay.
And so I would make adjustments and then shoot it again and then get back to the computer and see that my initial instincts were in fact correct. And so it was really bugging me because I never did that before.
You didn't second guess yourself.
I didn't second guess myself on. I mean, I did on film, but by then there's nothing you could do. You weren't making those kind of adjustments,
right?
And so I wanted to kind of get back to it. Get back to doing something simple yet complex, where I could get out and, you know.
Yeah. So where's this story going?
That's the end. Yeah.
It's a long lead up to something. I'm waiting for it. Where's the punchline?
Nothing. There's no punchline.
That's it.
And then we all bought cheese. No, but if you remember back in the day, when did you get married, Adam?
Oh man, 2005. I don't want to get in trouble for not answering quickly enough.
There's no EXIF data though on your pictures because I shot your wedding pictures.
Yes, you did.
And I shot them on film.
Yep.
I was back then, digital was still emerging, and I was the guy who I didn't think it was in a place where I wanted it to be yet.
Right.
And so I still liked shooting film, and that's what we did. My dad and I actually,
Yeah.
Came out and shot Your Wedding and bought some pretty fast film at the time. I mean, no one was shooting. We were shooting 1600 and 3200 ISO film.
Yeah.
Which at the time was amazing. Like, can't believe it. Now it's with digital. That's not blown anybody's hair back. It's still awesome, but so I'm going to post a couple pictures that I shot from your wedding. One of them is window light of your wife beforehand on the way to, just before we left to go to the church.
Yeah, love that picture.
I'm also a fan of that, and I don't know that I would get the same results with digital. I just feel like I would get, you know, the dress might be a little more gray or something like that. And that, I believe that was the 1600 ISO black and white film.
Okay.
And the other shot was, again, I wanted to shoot available light at the ceremony. My dad was shooting with a flash. He was shooting with color film and a flash, and I was shooting black and white available light.
Right.
And that was with my Canon FTB and the 1.4 50 millimeter lens.
Yeah. I think you did something funny with that picture to make my face kind of fat. So maybe you can explain how you did that.
That's just the nature of film. It tends to make hair disappear and faces go fat.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you had it turned up a little too high in that picture.
Yes. I had it turned to 11. My apologies. Yeah, but however, she still married you, so.
Yeah.
Starting to question her.
But now I'm totally awesome and extraordinarily fit, so everything worked out well for her.
It all came out in the wash. It was a good investment.
Yeah.
Long-term. She long-termed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, those are some examples of film that was shot way back in the day. And have you ever shot film?
No. I never have. I mean, really? I've in those cameras that you used to, you know, get over the counter, that's about it. I never had like a legitimate film camera and never shot, you know, film video camera or anything. So I've only pretty much been a digital guy.
All right. That's not uncommon. That's a pretty common situation. And I find that a lot of the top pros will talk about film versus digital, and they'll just say, you don't ever have to shoot film, and, you know, film is dead, and it's digital. And they're not wrong. They're not necessarily right either, in my opinion. Well, first of all, these guys who talk about shooting only digital and film is dead, they generally came up shooting film. So when they moved into digital photography, they already knew how to take pictures.
Right.
Their game was strong from having a difficult background, not a difficult, but like a strong background in film, gave them a great platform to then move into digital. And they didn't have to learn all the little things about, well, for instance, aperture and shutter speed and the correlation and all that stuff. It was a simple transition for them.
Right.
And so now when they talk about, no, you don't need to shoot film, well, they all did.
Yeah.
So you don't have to shoot film to be a good photographer. As, you know, if I can be, you know, fair to you for a second, you're demonstrating by taking really good pictures. Now, strike. I'm gonna edit that out. There's no way anyone will believe me.
I'm really smart though, so I figure things out quickly.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But what I am saying, my contention is, for almost everybody, if you go out and learn how to shoot film, your digital photography will be better.
Okay, and you don't think you can just practice digital enough that you're just good at it digitally?
I think you can. I think some people can. There are some pros out there working that have never touched film.
Let me give you an example. I mean, most of my expertise comes in how the human body works, and there's a principle that says, like, for example, for muscle, if you're going to train something, you have to train it in the specific way they're going to use it. So we call it the specificity of training principle. So to me, that sort of seems like it would apply for something like digital photography. If you want to be good at digital photography, then practice digital photography. But to practice film, I'm not sure, and again, you probably know better, but there would be enough carryover to digital that you wouldn't gather from just shooting a lot more digital.
I hear what you're saying, but for me, it's like if you're going to want to get really good at hiking up the Grouse Grind, you'll start doing it with a backpack.
Right.
So that in September, you take that backpack off and you're lightning fast up there.
Okay. And you think that there's enough carryover there that's the case for film versus digital?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. Now, well, you're the guy that knows. You're the guy that knows.
There you go. No one actually knows that. It's such a crazy debate. It's one of the great debates in Nerdville.
Right.
Is about film versus digital. Because you get, on the other hand, you get a lot of guys who swear by film because they like to touch the celluloid and they like the smell of it and it's not a real picture. As will you hear us talk about it, I disagree with it. I think digital is real pictures. I love shooting film. I really, really love it. And as we talked about last week, that's usually what I travel with for different reasons, not for any benefit, not because it's better, but because no one's going to steal it.
Right.
And, you know, all those things that we mentioned earlier
in
last week's episode. Those are the advantages to me. But I'm not the kind of guy who just wants to make his life difficult and I don't want to wear a goofy hat to the nightclubs. those are the hipsters that I'm talking about.
Right, right.
So, and if you're a hipster and you're still listening, I didn't mean it personally. It's just not for me. I'm not 100%. Oh yeah, film is the way to go, and I like nostalgia.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't do it just for nostalgia's sake. There's a lot of stuff we can let go from the past.
Okay.
So, that being said, without further ado, let's get into the. The interview with Chris and Sean and his wife Michelle. We sat down a few days ago at the studio of Tips from the Top Floor, and this is what came out.
So we're sitting here in the studio of Tips from the Top Floor, Chris Marquardt.
Top floor for the win!
Top floor. So let's introduce yourselves. Please. Starting with you, Chris.
Okay, I'm Chris Marquardt. I do a podcast about photography, Big Bad Competition. See you smile. Tips from the Top Floor. That's if you want to check it out, tipsfromthetopfloor.com.
So what do you do for a living?
The podcast. I have tons of sponsors. No, I don't. what do I do for a living? I shoot. I'm a photographer. I do workshops. I coach people. Do workshops in Germany, in the US, in Canada, in the Himalayas, and all sorts of places.
Great. And Sean?
Sean Galbraith, advanced amateur photographer and film enthusiast, occasional co-host of the Photo Netcast podcast, here visiting Chris in Germany and co-hosting a workshop with him, and here for today's challenge.
Next.
Hi, I'm Michelle, and I'm Sean's wife. From Canada, a beginner's photographer.
Cool.
So we have three hosers on the show right now, and one potentially honorary hoser.
I do have a Canadian flag. Does that count?
I'm going to have to ask you a simple question.
Yeah.
Which hockey player wore number 99 for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I only know one hockey player by name, and that would be Wayne Gretzky.
Sorry, we're looking for Wilf Paymont.
see?
Sorry,
hockey,
Chris.
Ask me any hockey question and you'll get a wrong answer.
Okay, so we have three hosers and
question.
And Marquardt. Okay, name a famous Canadian photographer. All right, moving on. So, there you go.
Sean just pointed at himself, which kind of says something about his ego.
I did have a television series.
This is true, yeah?
International. Internationally renowned television series.
Called?
Called Photo Explorers.
Photo Explorers.
Yep.
Okay. what sort of photos do you shoot?
My specialty is abandoned building and recreational trespassing. Myself and my team of photographers, we go around the world and get into places you're not supposed to go and take pictures of them and then do gallery exhibitions on that.
And I get yourself in trouble.
Get myself out of trouble.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good way to look at it.
Get
yourself out of trouble.
Very much. Trouble very, very rarely finds us. We're pretty good at hiding from it.
Good. Hey, Chris, what kind of stuff do you shoot?
I shoot just the nature of the beast is, as I do workshops of different genres. I shoot a lot of different things, but I prefer shooting pictures of people because people always do something to the person. It's always easier to tell a story when you have a person in the picture, at least for me.
Excellent. Well, the theme of this show, the title of the show, is the F word.
Okay.
So we're here to talk about film, which you guys all still shoot film?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been shooting film?
Sean, you have to say something and not just nod. It's not going to translate well on a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Most of the times, it's better if I don't say anything.
Actually, okay, we're not going to go in there.
There are usually legal ramifications when I speak. And I don't know how good your insurance is.
So how long have you shot film?
I've been shooting film since 2008, exclusively film. I learned on digital, and digital was it was an amazing learning tool. I couldn't have gone as far as I have. If I had started in film, I just would have been too frustrated too early on. But digital brought out the laziness that I have as a photographer and allowed me to be unrestricted. And I need restrictions in my creativity. Taking, 1,000 shots in a week and liking 12 photos just doesn't work for me. When I started shooting film, I had to slow way down, and now I like 90% of the shots that I take, and I think it's focused my creativity a lot better.
That shows a really good discipline.
It's enforced discipline. Yeah, I shoot large format film as well, and if I go out shooting on a productive day, I may take 10 photographs, and I only brought 15 sheets of film with me. You can't shoot anything. You have to be slow.
There's no spray and pray?
No, you'll run out of film in 10 minutes if you shoot fast. It just doesn't work. It's a different style of photography completely.
But you learned on digital.
I did learn on digital. Starting from, a simple point and shoot camera, learning about aperture, learning about shutter speed and the relationships and how it all works together, and you get that immediate feedback from the display, or you get the plug it into your computer, and so you can you have complete freedom to play and to experiment and to learn, and you don't have to wait a week to get your negs back from a photo lab, or you don't have you don't have to take notes as to what your quote unquote EXIF data would be. You get it right in the file, and you see, when I did this, it resulted in this photograph. And when I changed that setting to this, it changed the photograph thusly. And that's an invaluable learning tool. But once I was done learning, I graduated to film, and that's your test.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Chris, you still you shoot film?
Yeah, I started shooting film in the mid-'80s, 1980s, and shot mostly slides back then, which in retrospect helped me learn better metering, because slides are just unforgiving. You have to nail them. You can't do anything in development or processing. They're just the way they are. And they're very contrasty, so you don't, if you go too bright, you have overexposure immediately, underexposure on the other side. And then I gave up on it because it was getting inconvenient when digital came along. First, I shot a point-and-shoot that basically took all the control away from me, which ended up being quite frustrating, but also a very good thing, because all of a sudden you have this picture on the back of your camera that you could look at. So the learning curve went shoom, really high up, and then I was always hoping for the DSLRs to come down in price. I think back then they were like 15,000 euros. And
for
then,
a 2 megapixel.
For like a 2 megapixel DSLR. Yeah. And then they came down to like 5,000, and it was still like way beyond what I could afford. And then, the Canon brought out the 300D, and that's the rest is history, the original Rebel, digital Rebel. And the rest is history. That's when I jumped on it, and I just didn't stop for a long time. And I still shoot digital. I shoot a lot of digital, but my recreational photography that I do for myself to have fun has completely switched back to analog for the last 2 years almost. Because there is something about analog that is just different.
So by learning on film, see, I learned on film as well. Mm-hmm. I had my dad's FTB. And I found that by learning on film and then moving into digital, my digital photography was far, far better. Mm-hmm. And so you seem to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. You're the first person I met who was the opposite, starting on digital, moving to film.
Yeah, I think it's becoming slightly more common, though not common yet. In the medium and large formats, I would say it's becoming more common. I think those formats are having a bit of a renaissance right now. 35mm, I would say, is pretty much a dead format. Compared to digital, there's simply no real advantage other than you really like to shoot film. I think you'll see more and more people switching to film once they get a taste for it. I mean, that's what's great about things like Lomography and Holgas. They're completely accessible, they're relatively affordable, and they're fun for people.
And the infrastructure is still there. You can still just take a film, drop it off at the drugstore in mm-hmm. the corner, mm-hmm. and get pictures back a few days later. There are probably still some one-hour photos mm-hmm. around that you can just drop off
the
film. Yeah.
See, for me, I don't think 35 mil is dead. Not for me anyways. Mm-hmm. For the one reason, when we go on vacation, mm-hmm. I go somewhere with my wife, that's the only camera I take. Mm. I take my
That's the only film you can buy in any film store.
That's also very true.
You take your Canon FTB, mm-hmm. with a 50 mil lens, mm-hmm. you need to pound a tent peg in, you can use your camera.
Sure.
Okay, you drop it, you're not gonna break your digital SLR.
No.
You leave it in the car, nobody's going to steal your $80 FTB.
No, and if they do, who cares? You go on eBay, you buy a new one for $10.
Yeah. And to me, they are worth way more than that.
Yeah. Their value exceeds their worth. Or their worth exceeds their value.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of those is definitely true. And for me, if you're going, let's say you're traveling around, going to the beach or wherever it is, and you got dust and sand blowing around, you're not going to worry about your sensor.
No.
You know what? Because you're changing your sensor every shot. Mm-hmm. So for me, I like that part. I don't like taking my film through the airport scanners. Even though they tell you it's fine, I don't think it is fine.
I think Sean can tell us a story about that, because you came here from Canada. Mm-hmm. You're in Germany right now. And you... I told you can buy film here, but you had to bring it with you. So how did that work?
Well, you can buy film here, but apparently you can't buy the new formulations of Kodak here.
The Portra 4400?
The new Portra. And I brought six boxes of new Portra. When I packed up, I had an entire backpack of film, three boxes of large format quick load films, and 12 boxes of medium format film, and then an assorted bag of random films. And I went to the airport and just asked for a hand check, and they said no problem. They opened it up and they said, yeah, it looks fine, go ahead. Took a couple minutes, no big deal.
Mm-hmm. So you're the guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy slowing everyone down.
No, you're the only guy that's ever happened to.
Yeah, I've
was it a direct flight?
It was direct to Munich, and then we were supposed to change in Munich and fly up to Berlin, but the volcano closed the airport, so we took a train. But I've flown with film any number of times, and every time I've asked for a hand check in the United States, in Canada, and now in Europe. Actually, I haven't asked for a hand check in Europe because I haven't been on my way back yet, but I'll find that out when we leave from Prague in a few days. Mm-hmm. But so far, I've had no problem getting hand checks.
I've been on flights where it's been three legs and over three.
Really?
So I'm watching it go through the third time saying that's it. It's no longer fog. It is just, different
word. Who
knows? But, yeah. So, Chris, how do you determine when to shoot digital? Because you shoot with a 5D?
I shoot with a 5D. When I shoot digital, digital is more precise. Digital is more almost surgical. Like you really get a lot of detail. You can do a quick reshoot. You can check on the display very quickly if you got the shot. So when I have to get the shot, when is this like a paid situation, for example, a client, shooting for a client, doing commercial work, I shoot digital.
Yeah, you have to.
And unless the client wants me. I mean, sure. I shot pictures of bands, and one band wanted me to shoot part of that photo shoot in analog because they knew my work and they were like, yeah, cool.
Did they release their stuff on vinyl?
No.
Really?
No, normal.
Hypocrites.
Normal, actually digital download, not even a CD, I think. And they turned towards the analog pictures because they just liked them more.
So are you one of these kind of ironic guys who just likes to make life difficult?
Yeah, totally.
That is what, to me, that is what the reputation...
It's all about nostalgia. Nothing but nostalgia.
I like nostalgia. I like nostalgia, but there are certain things that are better. No, I do like it. Yeah. You don't like nostalgia?
Oh, totally. But that is only like such a minor part of the whole story.
It's not even a part of it for me.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I totally like having a camera that goes ka-chunk on you. And that is a work of art, a fine mechanical artwork. That's like a very, very, very complicated clockwork. And it just works. And it does really awesome things. I like that part of it. But that is only a minor part. The working analog is changing my photography, and I found that out after, well, about 2 years ago. I made that step back because digital was not really advancing me anymore. I stopped developing as a photographer. It was complete stagnation. Nothing moved, and whatever I tried, it didn't really help. And then I looked into analog again, and all of a sudden I grew as a photographer by leaps and bounds. It was really, really visible. Like where I had like 1 out of 100 pictures digital that I really liked, I ended up having a roll of 12 pictures in a medium format camera, and I ended up with 3 or 4 of them that I liked. So the ratio, the keeper ratio, as I call it, was much, much higher. And then I tried to find out what that was, why that was, and it has to do with putting more effort in it, being more thorough when you work, being slowing down, taking your time, thinking about really basic stuff like metering, exposure, composition. Everything is a bit more conscious. You're making more conscious decisions. And the analog pictures, taking a picture, an analog picture, is not as much taking one, but making a picture. It's more, you make a picture with your hands, you end up with a product. It's not a set of virtual bits that are on a memory card and that then will end up being on a website and just being in the digital world, but you have something tangible, something that you can hold in your hand, a piece of film that you made, or the picture on you made that. And that increases the value of it a lot.
Well, thanks, Albert Camus.
Is that what he said?
I don't know. He's pretty old. I don't know if he's around then. I don't know if he had digital. Did Albert Camus shoot digital?
I'm pretty sure not.
Yeah.
Was he a photographer?
No, he's an author.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure. So what does film smell like to you? Chemicals. Is that the big thing? Because that's what everyone accuses film guys, that you like to touch the celluloid.
Oh, yeah. The tactile quantity or quality of film is fantastic. I develop all my own negatives and slides and black and white and at home in the kitchen. And there's nothing in digital to compare to when you finish a batch of 4x5 slides and you pull them out and you hold them up to the light and you've completely nailed the exposure. And you've got this giant piece of film. It's just magic. It's incomparable in digital.
I think one thing to keep in mind is that I found that there are two different kinds of photographers out there. The ones that only the result counts for them. It's really important what comes out. But I've grown to like the process as well.
Process is great.
The process is part of it. And the process, I believe, reflects in the resulting picture, and the process makes me happy.
Well, the thing with the process, though, what's great about it is that with digital, the process, I mean, for the most part, it ends when you take the picture, when you push the shutter. I mean, you do some...
I beg to differ.
Well, fair enough. I mean, you dump it into Lightroom or whatever, maybe Aperture, and you tweak it here and there. But for me, when I was shooting digital, because I don't do much to photographs, I'm not doing some crazy HDR crap or something like that, and it was pretty much done when I hit the shutter. With film, the process, I mean, technically speaking, the process isn't finished till you make a print. But the process of creating the negative, of developing the negative, is part of the process. It's a continuation because you can, you change time, temperature, dilution, whatever. You completely change the outcome. The outcome, it has not been written simply by pushing the shutter.
True.
You're at the beginning of the process.
And there's something magical about not having a Command Z on your developer.
No,
it comes down to making a decision and having to stick to it. And that starts when you put the film in. That starts when you choose the camera. Now,
sure.
Typically, an analog photographer will have more than one camera because an analog camera is just not as expensive as a digital camera. So you might, as you said, you might buy an SLR, a film SLR, for $10, and then shoot with it. So I don't know, my entire collection of like 15 cameras is together not as expensive as my DSLR. So you tend to have more cameras, and then so you make a decision and you stick to it. You have to make that initial decision of what camera do I use.
The biggest decision to me when you go out shooting, and this is the one thing I like digital better for, is variable ISO.
That is an advantage to
just
digital.
Take a couple of cameras then with different films.
That's true.
That's what photographers used to do. Some photographers, like press photographers, used to have different SLRs with different lenses
black
on
and
them.
White.
Or black and white and color, or slide and negative. Yeah, okay, it's more to haul around, but then an SLR is much, much lighter than a DSLR. But you make that decision, then you make another decision, is what film do I put in? So you kind of lock yourself in a bit, you restrict yourself. And that's what Sean said earlier. Restriction is an important part in
the artistic process.
In the artistic process. If you have all the options all the time, if you can change that thing around as many times as you want, if you can revise your choice as many times as you like, then it will not push you forward. It will not help you advance. As soon as you start restricting yourself, you will have to think in different ways, and you will inevitably extend that toolbox that you use, your creative toolbox. It's just inevitable.
For me, I equate it to kind of like working out. If you're going to run a triathlon, you don't ride around in a wheelchair all day. You get out there and you do the exercise, and it makes you become... You're not going to run a triathlon every day, but you're going to be in good shape. So to me, that's what shooting film is like. Because I still shoot digital myself. Love shooting it. Love my 5D.
Oh yeah. That's it's a hell of a camera.
If film was dead, as everyone has said, why do they have so many plugins for grain simulation, for cross processing, for the scratches and the sloppy borders is the biggest one to me. Like that is film.
Yeah. Hipstamatic, Instamatic. I mean, it's all to Instagram. Yeah. It's all to give digital some quote-unquote life, something interesting about it, something to set it apart,
and we just,
which basically just means make it look like film.
And we just want to put the life right into the thing while we do it, during the process. It's not, for us, it's not just about the result, it's about how to get there.
Yeah, and there's, even with, all the plugins in the world will still not make it look like film. It'll make it look like, a film-ish kind of,
It will trick somebody effect. Who doesn't know any better.
Yeah, but there still is no digital equivalent of a properly exposed and well-made print from a negative. you can tell the difference. They have a depth to them. I mean, film literally has a depth to it because of the different emulsion layers. It has an organic look to it. It has a life to it. For me, I know when I'm, generally speaking, when I go to a gallery, I can tell which shots were shot on digital. I know that because they're extra sharp. They catch your eye quickly, and they have a punch to them, but they don't hold my eye very long. Especially something, let's say HDR, your eyes are attracted to the bright, shiny colors, but it's very ADD for me. It's like, oh, look at that, shiny, and then I'm on to something else. I don't care. I see the technique. I don't see the content. When I see a film shot and it's well made, my eyes will linger on it longer. I will want to look at it longer. It just has a quality that is attractive to my eyes. And there's a famous photographer in Toronto who recently switched to digital, and I hate it. He was a 4x5 shooter. He's one of my idols. He's a great guy. I've met him, but he switched to digital recently, and it is killing me because he does wall-sized prints, and you cannot do a wall-sized print effectively, even from digital medium format. And it's I hate it. I don't like looking at his photographs anymore.
You hear that, Wilf Paymont? Get back to shooting film. So are you a film snob then?
I would say, I can't say I'm a film snob entirely. I'm a pretty snobby film guy, because I'm a hybrid photographer, I would say. Because I do digital prints, I scan, I drum scan, ultra high resolution scan my large format negatives. For exhibition prints over, 50 inches wide prints, things like that. So I can't say entirely that I am a purist. I'm a snob at using film to capture the image, though. I will not use digital if I'm doing, quote-unquote, serious photography or stuff that I want to turn out well and that I want to eventually go on to exhibit. I will not shoot it digital, period. I don't even like looking at my old digital shots from the 3 years that I was shooting digital. And I don't want to exhibit any of those anymore. I don't want anything to do with them. I've almost scrubbed them completely off my website and everything. I am very much a snob when it comes to capturing on film.
There are things that film can do that digital just can't do. One of my favorite examples is those super panchromatic films. Black and white films that see more than the eye sees, that go into the infrared range.
Sure.
But they're not just infrared films. They see everything plus infrared. And you shoot them, and all of a sudden you get detail in the shadows that you wouldn't get with digital, because digital has that filter in it that cuts off the infrared range. So you'll all of a sudden get detail in areas that you never get with film. You'd have to resort to, HDR and stuff. You'd have to go back to some crutches to get there. Where with film, you get this in one shot. And it's there, and it has all the detail, and it's just amazing.
So what's, when you're shooting film, what's your favorite camera? Pick one.
I can't.
Quick.
I can't.
Okay, you pick one. Sean, pick one. Quick. Favorite camera.
Favorite camera film, I would have to say my 4x5.
What lens?
I like the 150, which in 35 millimeter terms is about 35 millimeters or so equivalent. It's a nice lens, moderately wide. I shoot a Shenhao 4x5, which is almost identical to Chris's new Chamonix 4x5 camera. It's just great to use. I absolutely love it.
For me, it's really courses for horses. It's depending on the style, I will not only make a choice of the film that I use, but a 6x6 medium format camera, square crop, will give me a different will give me different pictures than 4x5 or 6x9, 6x7,
6x17,
6x17, different film sizes, different sensor sizes, different different crops will influence the picture. I get more dynamic pictures when I shoot a 6x9. When I shoot a 6x6, I get pictures that are much more at rest, that are much more static. So I really have to make that choice based on what's coming up, based on what I think I will shoot. And then sometimes I find myself in a situation where I have the wrong camera for the job, and then I end up with static pictures of dynamic scenes, and that in itself will create another tension in the picture that can be quite interesting.
And the nice thing about film is that you have the option to actually make that choice. With digital, it's all, you know, a 2-3 crop, and you know the cameras are generally pretty interchangeable. There is no variety unless you're shooting, you know, a point and shoot that has a 3-4 ratio or something like that. But there's, you know, you can shoot your aspect ratio, and therefore the look of the photograph is not necessarily predetermined. You have any limited or unlimited variety, pretty much.
And I used to be the results only person like 3-4 years ago. I kept saying that on my show. It's like it's the result that counts. It's the result that counts. And then I started to rediscover the process, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, wait a minute. Different tools actually lead you to different results, and different films, different cameras, different lenses, different choices will influence what comes out at the end. It's mm-hmm. not just you. It's also partially the tool. You're still there to guide the tool. You're still there to point it towards the right thing in the right way, to include the right things in the picture. You're still there to press the shutter at the right moment. All these things are still with the photographer, but the tool will influence what the picture will say, the language of the picture.
And when it takes 20 minutes to set up a large format photograph, you know, you really have to like the process. If you don't like the process, just go back to digital.
That is extreme, but I'm looking forward to diving much deeper into that process.
Oh, it's fun.
So I keep it simple. I love my FTB. Mm-hmm. I have a 50mm 1.4 that I love to shoot with.
Great lens.
The only reason I don't love my Leica M3 is because no one sent me one yet. So if anyone finds one in the attic, I'll send you my email.
You are aware that here in Tübingen there is a very high-profile Leica store?
Yeah, but they actually sell them.
Yes, they do.
They still get full value for them. They sell them around 1,000 euros.
Yes, that
so is. If anyone has them in their grandpa's...
Actually, 1400. M3 1400. We saw one in the shop window today.
With a lens, though.
I think so.
Yeah. Without the lens, it's still 1,000 euros, which mm-hmm. kind of out of my price range right mm-hmm. now. So, like I said, I'll send you my address if you want to send me one. So, I've noticed lately, the whole reason I wanted to talk about film is because lately in shooting digital, I've kind of lost my way. Like I lost my edge, my sharpness. I know it sounds so cliche, but it happened.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And not just like creatively, I'm fine. I think others may not. But it's not the creative part. It's my instincts. Mm-hmm. I'm out shooting and I know what an image should look like. I know where it should be on the histogram. I know the aperture, f-stop, shutter speed. And then I check the LCD screen, and I don't like what I see. And so I question myself, and I'm going to shoot this one at plus 2/3. And then I get back to the computer, and my initial instincts were correct. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't have done it. And so that's why I like my FTB so much, is because there's nothing to it. There's no automatic, no autofocus, no auto exposure. You do it. You trust mm-hmm. your instincts.
You're making it.
And so what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. what we're going to do is I'm going to extend a challenge to you guys, and I'm going to participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be the European no metering shootout.
Oh boy.
Everybody gets a roll of 35mm
uh-huh.
color negative film. We're going to go out in an hour,
uh-huh.
in the span of an hour, and we're going to shoot the roll with no metering whatsoever. That means no iPhone, no external meter, nothing. Just
your eyes.
Are we allowed to use previous knowledge?
Previous knowledge is okay. What do you mean by previous knowledge?
Well, there are little tools, like little, in quotes, rules that kind of help you. And that used to, photographers used that, the Sony 16.
Okay, hey, let's deal with that later, after we shoot.
Okay.
No giving
no hints.
Okay.
No giving hints. So the rules are, we're gonna
beep that out.
Oh, no, that stays in. Too bad, Markhart. So...
No digital correction.
What we're going to do...
It's an analog recorder. There's a little tape in there.
We're going to go out and we're going to shoot a roll
mm-hmm.
up to 36, however many you want. You got to pick your best six.
Yep.
Before Uh-oh. We develop. All right? So you're going to write down your EXIF data with a pencil.
Oh, boy.
Or a pen, if you're 19th century. You need to take one portrait of a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
you got to take a quote-unquote architecture shot,
okay,
which in Tübingen shouldn't be too hard,
mm-hmm,
and a close-up of something. That's it.
A close-up of something.
Something close.
Mm-hmm.
And you can incorporate, if you can take an architecture portrait close-up all in one shot, done, no problem. So we're going to give out awards for all three categories,
uh-huh,
and awards really just pat on the back. We're all going to decide ourselves.
Yeah.
We're going to see who had the highest percentage of proper exposures.
Okay.
So we'll see, you know, on the honor system, if you meant to really blow it all out like that,
uh-huh,
then okay, we'll trust you. And we're going to go for best overall photo.
Okay.
All right?
Good.
Everybody's... What about if you, like a blown out shot? That's, what if you're taking a risk on a shot? You want to really sort of push the boundary of the film or the film lens combination. Is there an award for that?
If you meant to blow it out
and it works,
you get it. Hey, you get it. I'll trust your word.
Okay.
If you meant to blow it out, then you betcha.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Sounds like fun. I'm
so
in.
It's going to be you, Sean.
Yep.
Myself and Michelle.
Sure. Yeah.
Is that scary? Is that a scary process?
Very scary.
Prospect?
Yes.
It is.
But, you know, I've been getting really good instructions from good photographers lately, so I'm in.
Cool. Very cool.
Have you shot much film before?
Very little. Holga, that's it. But it should be fun.
Holga kind of takes care of itself anyway.
Yeah, there's not much decision involved in that.
I think you've shot one roll on the Holga.
Yeah, that's so, the extent of my experience.
Cool.
That's cool.
Okay, where can we find you? Chris, where can we find your stuff?
Oh, my stuff over at tipsfromthetopfloor.com, or actually better, chrismarquardt.com. Chris, MARQUARDT.com. Rewind that and you'll be fine.
And Sean, where can we find your stuff?
On Twitter, I'm Sean Photos, SEAN, and my website is smlg.ca, smlg.ca.
It's easier than mine.
Yeah, the other one's seangalbraith.com, but the other one's easier. It redirects the same place.
Okay.
And Michelle?
Not yet. Somewhere in Flickr, but neither yet.
Well, I'm glad you're going to take part in it, so all right.
Let's get to it.
Let's get out there.
And we're back.
Wow.
Wow. You didn't even listen to it.
No, I didn't.
No.
But my guess is that it was an amazing interview, was it not?
It was. It was a good day. Actually, it was a great day.
Okay.
But for the chilling conclusion and the twist ending that doesn't actually exist, head on over to Tips from the Top Floor. That's tipsfromthetopfloor.com.
Spit it out, man.
Yeah, there's going to be a link. I don't know. I've said it before. I've worked with them before.
Put a link.
There's going to be a link on the website, but go to – if you're listening to our show, you know who Chris is. So.
Yeah, and you can abbreviate it. Just talk yourself through it. Tips from the Top Floor, right?
TFTTF. Bam.
There you go.
All right. For the – conclusion and the results from our photo shootout that we did that day, our European no meter shootout. You can go ahead and check out his show, and I put up a link to our pictures on our site.
Did you win?
We didn't. It wasn't really like that, so we'll let the listeners decide who won.
Okay.
So,
did I win?
No, you definitely were the loser on that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we had trouble audio shopping you in.
Next time.
Yeah. Anyways, so that brings us to the end of episode 23, the film episode.
Okay.
So before we get into where we can find your stuff, what's next week's episode or next week's photo challenge going to be?
How about something to do with vivid colors?
Vivid colors.
We just did black and white. How about we go the other way and do something very bright?
Let's do something very bright. Okay, I'm in.
Do you have? Do you want to tweak it at all, or are we going to leave it as open ended as very bright colors?
Vivid colors.
Okay,
that's what we want to go with. And like we talked about, like I talked about earlier, when shooting black and white, looking for contrast situations to separate your subject. You can do whatever you like. This is not Russia.
Right.
But I am going to look for situations where a color will stand out from the other colors.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to look for.
I'm going to look for something like that, but make mine better.
I'm going to make a call and say that you're going to ramp up the saturation so far it's going to look like cartoon nonsense.
Maybe. You never know.
So, awesome. I look forward to seeing that.
Okay.
Anyways, how many times have I said anyways today?
A few.
Yeah, it's been a lot. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. It's been a long night. Watched the entire Canucks game and then stayed up to do the podcast. So.
And I didn't listen to your interview, but I'm guessing you said it a few times on there.
No.
No?
No. I was like Walter Cronkite mixed with Edward R. Murrow in that one.
Great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Well, when I get finished with this, I'm going to go right to that interview and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're not. So, that's the end of the show. Adam, where can people find your pictures?
As always, I am the staff photographer on my wife's blog, the Schwartz Chronicles. So that's schwartzchronicles.com. And Alan. I was going to ask you, where can we find you?
Let's do that again. Take it from the. We'll pretend like we didn't do it again.
Okay.
Okay. Say.
And blah, Alan. Blah, blah,
com. No, blah, 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 dot com.
Okay. And Alan, where can we find your stuff?
What?
Your stuff? Where can we find it?
Oh, yeah. As always, I am at alanattridge.com and alanattridge.de, but really it's the same thing. We are at Two Hosers on the Twitter. We have our Flickr site people are starting to comment on, so check out there and add your pictures. This week's will be vivid colors, so please add your vivid colors photos. And we are of course, at twohosers.com, also available on iTunes. There's tons of options. You can't really miss us.
Great.
So, until next week, get out there and make better pictures.